the world's most exciting podcast, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. Here he is, Michael Savage.
The man who saves wolves, a pleasure to see
you. Hello, hi.
Great.
Nice to meet you.
Great job, Eli.
And iconic, thank you so much.
The Return of Wolves, an iconic predator's struggle to survive in the American West. Timber Press, April 2023, available on Amazon. Eli Frankovich joins us today on the Michael Savage podcast. Eli is a journalist who covers the environment, conservation, and outdoor recreation in Washington for the Spokesman Review, the state's second largest newspaper. He has been published in the Seattle Times, the Chicago Tribune, the Miami Herald, the Charlotte Observer, and elsewhere. He lives in Spokane, Washington, and he joins us now on the podcast. I am a conservationist. I don't call myself an environmentalist because it has connotations that are negative to some. I think everyone can agree that conservationists are good people. We want to conserve the environment. We want to save the poor animals. We want to clean the air and the waters, as Aristotle wrote, airs, waters, and places. As a man who's trained in botany and collected medicinal plants all over the South Pacific, and I've saved ecosystems here and there, I certainly appreciate what you're doing with the wolf.
The Savage Nation. It's Savage on Demand.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
First of all, I want to stick to your book because I want you to sell books.
Sure.
If you're taking time out of a hike, you got to sell a book now and again. The book is The Return of Wolves, an iconic predator's struggle to survive in the American West. It came out last spring, and I highly recommend it, and I really appreciate your time, Eli. I get it that you write about other things, right? I mean, you just cover conservation, outdoor recreation, the environment, but you're also an outdoorsman, right? I mean, you're a climber, a rock climber. Mm-hmm.
Yes, rock climber. I'm learning to hunt. I'm a late onset hunter. A number of other things. Yeah.
When you hunt, you hunt with weapons. What kind of weapons? Guns?
Rifled. Yeah.
So here you are, a conservationist who's not ashamed to admit that you hunt. And
that's one of the amazing things about America is we've got this long tradition of hunter conservationists, and I hope that continues. Hunting, in my experience, puts you in connection with the land in a way that not a lot of else does. It's a bit of an irony, right?
Yes, it certainly is. Now, I learned that last year you reported from Ukraine. What was that about?
Yeah, that was a bit of an offshoot, but the newspaper that I worked for, basically when the war started in Ukraine, I think like most other people were, that's pretty much all I could think about or focus on. And so I knew about a number of folks from the region that the paper that I worked for covered that were going there to help, a couple like former ex-military guys that were going to volunteer and some doctors. And so I basically asked my bosses like, hey, will you send me there? I didn't think they would, but they kind of ran it up the flagpole, and eventually I got the go ahead, and I spent 6 weeks over there, although I wasn't in Ukraine that whole time.
You know, I saw an article yesterday, which I put on my website, of an Irish Rambo who went there to fight with the Ukrainians, and he left after 17 months saying Ukraine frontline is horror, genocide, slaughter, says Irish Rambo, who is leaving after 17 months. And I watched the video of him. Ukraine will haunt me. He said there are dead people everywhere, Russian dead, Ukrainian dead.
Yeah.
And he said the biggest problem when we get into the trenches is stepping over the dead bodies that are already there from the last people that went in. He said that really haunts you. So he was a volunteer, went there to help Ukraine, and then he couldn't take it anymore from the death and the dying. Yeah. And I, for me, I can't stop. I lay awake and I can't take it anymore. This war is crazy. I always thought leftists and liberals were against war. And then I had that quote, conservatives who allegedly were conservatives are really for war. Leftists are for the war. What the hell is going on that everyone doesn't understand? Not only is the bloodshed unnecessary right now, there's no talk of peace. There's no talk of getting together and working this out at the UN. Eli, what do you think of all of this?
I mean, I think it's sort of unconscionable that we're not pushing for peace more. I mean, this is the crazy thing about being an American, right? Is we haven't had a war on our soil in, I don't know, however long. and so we don't really know what, I mean, the brutality of it. We've been in wars, obviously, and many of our men and women are veterans, combat veterans. So they know, but yes. as a general population, you don't realize like how just horrible it is to have your home bombed or, you know, your neighbors killed. And I interviewed folks, Ukrainians, who had escaped from Bucha, right? One of the worst places there. And it was just like heartbreaking and so relatable too, because you could just imagine, I could imagine my city. You could just imagine it happening. And
no, all you gotta do is go to downtown Seattle and watch them, what they've done to Seattle. You have a combination of the predator wolf and war all in one,
right?
When they start burning buildings down. No, but seriously, Ukraine frontline is horror, genocide, slaughter, says Irish Rambo. This guy's as tough as nails, and he couldn't take the horror that he was seeing of stepping over dead bodies. And I found that to be very intriguing, that you, as a conservationist, environmentalist, writer of the environment, know something more about these situations than people, you know, may imagine. So the book, in a way, The Return of Wolves, is not tied to war, but doesn't the wild animal live in a state of war all the time? Aren't they basically
at points? Yeah, I think there's a lot of beauty too in the natural world and tender. I mean, it's tooth and fang, but then there's also tenderness and you see that with wolves. They're brutal killers, right?
Yes.
The way, if you've ever seen a wolf pack on a video take down an elk, it is not a death you would wish on your worst enemy. Mm. And then the flip side, right, is that they're great parents. Like they really care for their young. And
wow.
And so I don't know. I see some similarities there with humans, right? Like we can be just brutal to each other, but then we can also be incredibly tender and these humanitarian gestures. And I saw that in Ukraine, like this bizarre juxtaposition of just the worst brutality combined with this incredible outpouring of you know, humanitarian aid and support and care. So yeah, I definitely see some parallels there. And I think the broader thing, my book is not about Ukraine at all, but it is about the social and political divisions that I think have really pulled this country apart, which we do see with Ukraine. And you see it in the wolf debate. You get people that are sure to agree on most things, just fighting viciously around this one topic. And I just hope we can sort of sidestep that. I think it's a real tragedy that there's this politicization of conservation versus environmentalism. Like we should all be kind of rowing in the same direction.
Oh, I agree 100%.
Particularly when it comes to the place we live. Yeah.
Well, I agree 1,000%. We have one Earth, one Earth, one ecosystem called the globe. I agree 100%. I may disagree with some about certain facets about what's being reported to alarmism. I mean, see, this is the thing, is I don't think alarmism helps us when we're talking about climate change, for example. And that's a separate topic. I don't think we need to even get into it. I'm a boater. I live next to the water. I live 15 feet from San Francisco Bay for the last 25 years. We have not seen 1 centimeter rise in the height of water, whatever you call it. Tide lines are identical that they've been.
Right.
And if you go back to the Pleistocene, we had high, you know, much more warming then than we do now. That's before Henry Ford, you know, was a glint in his grandfather's eye. So, yeah, of course, but doesn't mean we shouldn't try to make the earth a better place for all of us.
Right.
So, and I really appreciate people like you in sense that you're devoting yourself to these subjects of, you know, when you say you write for the newspaper world in the area of environment, conservation, outdoor recreation. So you cover it from all spectrums, because if you cover it from the environmental point of view, you're dealing with one faction. And you cover it from the outdoor recreation side. That's the hunter, for example. So you have to really talk to all of them, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, that's why being a journalist is, I think, such a great career, is that you get to talk to both. You get to talk to everyone. And you try to, I mean, my goal has always been to try to understand why people think what they think. And I think that, you know, I think people forget to do that or choose not to do that quite often.
We dehumanize the other side. That's what's going on in America. Right wing says left. Communist, fascist.
Right.
Nazi, Marxist. I hear it all the time. And we forget there's a human being inside those eyes. Before you go, Eli, I don't want to pry into your personal life, but if you care to talk about it, where did you grow up? What did you grow up learning?
So I grew up in North Idaho, in the panhandle of Idaho. And I'm really thankful for how I grew up in retrospect. I grew up with a, you know, fairly, I would say, liberal, progressive family. My dad's a professor and my mom owns a yoga studio. So you can probably guess kind of what their politics are.
You're a stereotype. You're the stereotype.
Yeah, I am. Yeah. But I grew up in a very politically and conservative place. One that had traditionally been very sort of blue collar, a Democrat, I would say, like Union Democrats, but then without offshoring and all of this, and just changes in everything, it became, a lot of jobs left, a lot of blue collar jobs left, mining and whatnot, and then it became more politically and socially conservative. And so, I've always been sort of kind of in between. Like I can't, you can't just think one, you can't just believe what you think is the only truth.
I understand
living in a place like that. You have to try to understand why, you know, almost everyone else around you thinks differently. And I think that I'm just so grateful for that, because it doesn't serve anyone to just be entrenched in your own beliefs. And it's also just kind of more, it's more boring. It's a very like limited worldview.
You need to run for office. Can you imagine a centrist running for office today?
Yeah, it wouldn't work.
Hated by everybody.
Yeah.
You won't be loved by everybody.
That's what a good journalist is.
No, right? I've learned the hard way that no matter what you do, people are going to hate you anyway.
Yeah.
No matter what you do, no matter what you say.
Michael Savage, a host like no other.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
And I think you need to tell the people, Eli, why are wolves important? Because we've been told that they're evil. Folklore tells us that they kill, which they do. So do we. We're the apex predator on the planet, of course, as we can see in Ukraine right now. Men killing men for no reason whatsoever. The butchering goes on. And so they were nearly eradicated in the 1990s, Eli. The gray wolf has made a comeback. How did that happen?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty incredible story. And honestly, you know, there's a lot of bad ecological news and whatnot, but I think this is a this is like a bright spot, to be honest. So gray wolves were pretty much eradicated throughout North America, or the lower 48, I should say, by the 1920s and 30s. And that was a very sort of intentional decision, poison and whatnot. And then things began to shift. In the 1990s, the Clinton administration reintroduced gray wolves into Yellowstone and parts of Idaho. And this was a reintroduction. These wolves that were taken from Canada and placed there. And they were in Yellowstone, one of the largest sort of untouched, at least by human development, ecosystems in the world. And they did quite well. And they've spread out from there. And in the case of Washington State, they kind of made a return in 2008. The first sustainable reproducing pack was confirmed. And those wolves came from Yellowstone and also from populations in Canada. And that's broadly similar in pretty much every Western state. Wolves have sort of naturally returned reintroductions in Yellowstone.
How does a pack from another country adapt to a new ecosystem or a new environment? In other words, basically they're immigrants. They're forcibly repatriated or put into a new environment. How do they adjust immediately? I'm a dog lover and I've had dogs since I'm a kid. Dogs are creatures of habit. What about wolves?
Yeah, I mean, wolves are incredibly versatile, right? At one point, they were the most widely distributed land mammal on planet Earth. So wolves live in the Arctic in negative 40 degree conditions.
Wow.
They've also lived in India and in the desert climates.
Really?
They're incredibly, incredibly versatile. And then the other point to that, the ecosystems between the Western US and Canada, Eastern or Southern Canada, I should say, it's not so wildly different. So I think that adaptation wasn't too hard. And honestly, if you think about it from the wolf perspective, when they were plopped down in Yellowstone, they had these huge elk herds that hadn't had predators for, 80 years, really.
Oh my God.
So that was kind of like all you could eat buffet for a little bit there.
Okay. So wolf restoration projects began in the late 20th century. Who was behind it and why? Who suddenly said, oh, the wolf is good?
Yeah, I think, I don't think there was just one person, of course, but I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with the North American model of wildlife conservation. And so this is this very, this model that's very specific to the Americas, and it sort of does a lot of conservation work on the backs and with the money from hunters and others who are very like passionate, engaged user groups. And in the U.S. and North America broadly, there had been this big decline in animals, elk, deer, buffalo, obviously. And that all started to change. Teddy Roosevelt and others sort of began to champion conservation, like you would say, from sort of a sportsman or sportswoman's perspective.
But he was a great conservationist. Teddy Roosevelt is very unsung as a conservationist. He gave us our first national park in the Vancouver. Didn't he do it in the Vancouver area?
I believe so. Yeah, I think that's correct. Yeah.
He was a great conservationist.
There was this buildup of sort of this desire to return some of these species. And it started out with, deer and elk and whatnot. And then there was people started to look more at like predators, like wolves, these animals that had, like you'd mentioned, traditionally been vilified and exterminated for some understandable reasons. If you were a shepherd, a wolf pack could destroy your whole life, right? You could starve.
Well, interesting to me. I was at a dog show years ago before COVID at the Cal Palace here in San Francisco, and they had various artifacts. And of course, I'm a fan of, I love dogs, but the wolfhounds always intrigued me. I had a friend, an Irish bar friend, the one in the bar, his name was Fionn the dog. And I never saw a dog like this in my life, the size of it, the way it could run. We were sitting outside the bar one day and Fionn was lying on the ground in the sawdust and he saw something on another street over. And that dog jumped up and was able to lope, not run, over to that street. And it was like three strides, it looked like to me.
Yeah.
I had never seen an animal like that in my, you know, in the dog world.
Yeah.
But interestingly, at the show, the dog show, they had a collar made of iron with spikes on it that the shepherds used to put around the neck of the wolfhound. And the wolfhound would hide amongst the sheep. So when the wolf attacked the herd, the wolfhound would pop up and have a little extra help, which was the wolf collar. It was unbelievable. I mean, how the hell does a wolfhound fight a wolf?
Well, and I think that's something. I mean, that's one of the things I hope to get at in my book is, you know, a lot of the people that really are the most excited about returning wolves, right, are the ones that don't live anywhere near wolves. And I would put myself in that situation. I live in a city, right? So I'm not having to coexist with wolves on a day-to-day basis. But wolves are, they're powerful animals, right? It's not like just your dog. It's like what you're describing, these powerful, fierce predators. And I think a lot of people sort of don't realize that.
The Savage Nation. It's savage, uncut, unfiltered, and raw.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
How big is an adult male wolf?
Yeah, I mean, they're smaller than you'd actually think. I think like a large wolf would be right around 200 pounds, 180, you know, somewhere in that range. So it's definitely big, but I think anything above that is really sort of an outlier.
But 180 is a big animal.
Yeah, oh yeah.
It's a big animal, and we have to remember how strong a wild animal is. You know, we have lunatics who go into a zoo. They used to jump over the walls to go pet the tiger and get killed. In Honolulu, you know, people get high and think that the animal was their friend. They don't understand what a wild animal actually is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, and there's all sorts of stories of folks who really have some sort of a romanticized vision of what a wolf is, kind of getting in trouble with that.
So, no, I like the way you put that. So, you know, you're a realist when it comes to the whole picture. You know, the wolf is a predator who will kill the herd of sheep or cattle or whatever they're raising. And so the cattleman says, wait a minute, that's my livelihood. Kill the wolf.
Right.
How are the cattlemen dealing with this reintroduction of the wolves?
Yeah. Yeah. So I spent a fair bit of time with ranchers in Eastern Washington and throughout the state. And these are smaller to mid-sized operations. So I think they're, at least from my perspective, it's a pretty honorable career, right? They've lived on the land. They know the land. They care about their animals by and large. And it's been a struggle for them. Wolves don't kill a lot of cattle. It's like a small numbers, but they do. That does make an impact still because the margins are quite thin.
Yes.
And then there's a bunch of like second and third order implications. And this is how the ranchers have explained it to me. So you maybe only lose two animals to wolves, but then you have some animals that are injured and then you have some animals that just disappear and you don't really know, maybe they died, maybe wolves got them, maybe not. And then there has been some studies showing that, the presence of wolves, it reduces the overall weight of the animals, just via stress. And that's
funny. A nervous cow.
Yeah.
It's a good weight loss diet.
Yeah.
So living in America must be good for everyone's health index.
Yeah. The Wolf Beach diet. Yeah.
Everyone's nervous here all the time.
Yeah. Right. And then the last thing that they point to is that there's some research showing that miscarriages are more common, again, due to stress.
Wow. That's awesome.
And so I think that, not for the rancher.
No, but I'm saying all of the effects, the the anxiety in a cat in the cowherd.
Yeah.
You know, brings me to the time I went to a slaughterhouse in Fiji. I never forgot it, never got it out of my mind. The fear in the animals being led into that slaughterhouse was something I have never forgotten. Oh, sure, they know that their friends are dying. Oh, sure, they know they're next to be killed. Oh, sure, you can see it and smell it. And people who have never been to a slaughterhouse should go once and make everyone into a vegan.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, that comes up quite a bit in my book is, like, I think we've really underestimated the emotional and intelligence range of animals, right?
Mm.
Like, cows are considered one of the dumber ones. And like you said, they're picking up on a lot. And,
I don't know why they say a cow is dumb. I've been around cows. They're not dumb. They're pretty smart. Elsie knows whether she's a dairy cow or she's going to be slaughtered.
Right.
Yeah, it's awful, you know. No, I become as I gotten older. You know, I have a friend who fought in 5 wars. He was a born warrior and grew up in a hippie community in Marin County. I said, how the hell did you become a warrior? He's a doctor and a musician. And he said, I'm a pescatarian now. He said, I just been around too much killing and death to ever eat anything that lives like any animal.
Yeah.
And that's what happens with a lot of people. But again, this is not about that. It's about the wolf and the reintroduction. So why is it important? Why was it important to reintroduce the wolf is the real question.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of research showing just how it fits into the larger ecosystem. And, it's like an apex predator. And so apex predators generally have an outsized sort of influence on species downstream from them. So there's been some really interesting research in Yellowstone and elsewhere. One study that comes to mind, I'm sure many are familiar with chronic wasting disease. It's this really nasty neurological disease that impacts deer and elk and sort of other ungulates.
Never heard of it.
Mad cow disease. Yeah, it's like mad cow disease. So it rots their brain. And it's sometimes called like the zombie deer disease because the deer will stumble around and have no fear of humans, just drool. It's really nasty, and it can destroy a herd. Like,
what's
it's
from?
Happened in Colorado.
What is it?
Well, it's a prion disease, and this is getting a bit out of my league, but it started in Colorado. There's a few different theories about how it was formed, and one of them is that it was from like a game farming basically and just concentrating animals together, but there's not a definitive answer, but it can survive in the soil. These little prions can survive in the soil for like 10 years. So
it's
just a really nasty thing.
Oh, I don't want to eat.
So anyways,
I don't want to eat that stuff.
No. Yeah. It hasn't, there's been no human jump over.
No, there's been no zoonotic.
No zoonotic. Yeah.
Home of borders, language, culture, the Savage Nation.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Where are you? I see a boulder behind you. Where are you?
I'm in southern Idaho, near Wyoming border. I'm on a climbing trip. I'm in basically in the middle of nowhere, but there's quite good cell service.
But where are you getting cell service in the middle of this wilderness?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. Where I'm camped is right above the national energy laboratory, so I think that they have good cell service.
Oh, Jesus. Are you running off Elon Starlink?
No, I don't think so. Not that I know of.
Fascinating. Yeah. Fascinating.
So there's been these studies with wolves showing that they sort of they'll preferentially hunt and kill animals that are CWD positive. And sort of, it's almost like a cleansing, right, of these populations. And so that's just one example of how wolves can be, beneficial to the ecosystem.
Well, no, I'm an outsider looking in on this whole thing. And of course, everyone has an emotional reaction to the death of a species. It's like, oh God, you know, I learned when I was a young environmentalist or conservationist, and I consider myself a conservationist all my life because of the negative connotations of the word environmentalist, which is gluing your hands to a roadway to block traffic. It's a little different than, to me, than conserving the environment any way you can. And we all want clean air, waters, and places, and we all would like the ideal world of, you know, all the animals living happily forever after. But with diminished earth resources, whether it's the poor elephant, which we donated tons of money to it personally, my wife and I, over the years, till we almost threw our hands up, the killing of those poor, beautiful creatures. Mm-hmm. Everyone has an emotional reaction of, oh, elephants shouldn't be killed. But it's almost the opposite for the wolf, which is, no, kill the wolf because the wolf is a predator. The elephant doesn't bother anyone, right. You know. Right. So why should we care about the wolf is the question.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a practical reason. Like I had mentioned, they can really help an ecosystem, right? Whether it's keeping chronic wasting disease down or preventing these. So like in Yellowstone, the elk there before wolves, they would go through these big cycles of like their population would grow to this huge number, right? And then they would basically eat themselves into a famine, and then they would have this big drop off. So it was this big up
and down. You mean they'd kill all of the animals they were eating, or kill off the resource? And then they go into a famine from killing all the animals?
Yeah. So the elk would have, they would have so many calves and whatnot. And then to a point where they actually didn't have enough food, and then there would be a famine. And wolves have sort of stabilized that, right? And sort of reintroduced, by, you know, ecologists call it the ecology of fear. So, you know, where predators kind of keep prey animals on their toes and, kind of within more of a sustainable population.
My father taught me that in New York when I grew up in New York.
Yeah, it's true.
He said to me, you're going to come to work with me in Manhattan because it's dangerous and dirty. He said, otherwise you're going to be soft and weak. So he used to make me go out alone as a little kid in the streets of Manhattan. I hated it. And I hated walking through the garbage on Ludlow Street to get him a sandwich, but it made me be very aware of my environment. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. 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 And so I think wolves do that, right? They do that for humans too. I think that's part of why.
But don't we have human wolves in our, don't we have human wolves in our world? Everywhere you turn, there are
wolves. We have human wolves. Yeah. But literally also people that live around wolves, you know, you think twice. So you think a little more when you know there's a wolf pack nearby. Mm-hmm. By and large, wolves aren't going to attack humans, but I've encountered wolves in the wild, and you definitely, you see that they're fierce, they're predators, and they have their own wills and desires that aren't connected to what I'm doing that day. And that's sort of, that can be a bit eerie.
Do they, did you say that they generally do not attack humans?
Generally not. Yeah.
Why not? We're just meat to them.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's this, they're opportunists, right? Like they don't want to risk any more than they have to. The places in the world where there's actually been some really interesting research on when and where wolves attack humans, and the commonalities tend to be like impoverished poor places where they're using children as shepherds.
Oh my god.
And so that makes some intuitive sense, right? Kids they're smaller and less threatening, and so that's why I say generally it has happened. It does happen. Some people say wolves never attack humans, and that isn't true.
Uh-huh.
But it's not a, it's, you know, in terms of things that you have to worry about, it's pretty low on your list.
Interesting. Now anyway, you're doing a great job. Yeah. I wish you the best with your book. It's available on Amazon, I assume, correct?
It is. Yes.
Any final words about wolves, Eli, before you go back to climbing rocks?
You know, just that, I mean, this book is about wolves. It's about the cultural and political side of it more than the ecological, although I do talk about that. But I believe that it really is, has some lessons like what we just talked about, these divisions in our culture and sort of the importance of of listening to the other side and trying to understand why and what they believe, even if it doesn't change what you believe, but giving them that courtesy and the respect.
Well, in a sense, you're a classic liberal. In other words, you are how I was educated as a young man in New York. Everyone was a liberal. I didn't know of anyone else. I had no idea there was a thing called a non-liberal. In fact, there was no definition of anyone but what we thought. Everyone thought in a liberal manner. I went to Queens College, which was these were all emigrants from Europe. I had no idea. Most of them were communists. They were nice people, you know, brainwashed me. So I believed everything they taught me. It took me a while to understand a lot of the stuff I was learning was quite limited in his worldview. But it gave me the ability to understand you could be a nice person and still be a political opponent. You don't have to hate the opponent. Yeah. And the only way out of this is to stop hating. So I appreciate what you're doing. I wish you the best with the return of the wolves, and take care of yourself. Don't slip on any slippery rocks.
Hey, thank you so much. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. Keep up the great work. Appreciate it very much. Well, thank you very much for listening to today's podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it and learned something from it. We have about 400 other episodes available for you to listen to absolutely free. You can go back into our vast library of podcasts and listen to any one of them at any time. And remember this, if you want to listen to my podcast ad-free, sign up for the Savage Premium Membership and get access to ad-free podcasts as well as some premium content from our Savage Archives. How do you sign up for those ad-free podcasts? Please visit michaelsavage.com for a link. Again, thank you for your listenership. This is Michael Savage.